Marcus Lewa.
Two young people decided to form their own organization called the Guardian Angels. You see them with red berets. When you see them, you get a nice, secure feeling in your heart.
I admire Curtis Sliwa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
We've got Curtis Sliwa from WAPC Radio.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New York.
Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa. What happened today? Why? And what's next? Live, local, on it. 77 WABC.
Minutes after the hour 5. Yours truly, Curtis Sliwa, on the drive home at 5. And as promised by Steve Lonigan, leader of the rebel faction of Republicans at the RNC, they were going to try to get a roll call vote. And we have wall-to-wall coverage from the convention in Cleveland. First in the mornings with Connell McShane of the Imus in the Morning Show. He's actually been assigned to the barricades. Ken Duffy, you heard his hourly updates. He's assigned to the floor. And our political director, Rita Cosby, who joins us right now. Thanks for putting your hands across America from Cleveland, Rita.
Thank you. It's been quite a dramatic day already. And boy, as you talk about drama on the high seas, it just erupted here in the hall just about 30 or 40 minutes ago, Curtis.
Well, explain, because Steve Lonigan has been hinting to us over and over as one of the leaders of the anti-Trump faction that there would be some insurrection, some unrest on the floor, even though he himself was not allowed to be at the RNC convention. Can you describe it for us and tell us exactly what the outcome was?
Yeah, it was a pretty dramatic moment. It was a roll call vote, which traditionally is usually a pretty normal procedure. It's yays, nays. But in this case, nothing is normal when you're dealing with Donald Trump. And what turned out to be a very sort of procedural thing turned into an incredible outburst here on the floor. And to give you a sense of the Quicken Loans Arena, it is a huge arena. It is packed wall to wall at that moment with delegates. And suddenly it comes from Mike Lee, of course, the senator, who said, wait a minute, no, I don't agree with the rules. In other words, we want someone other than Trump to be submitted. And they were talking about a whole bunch of procedural things that are essentially allowing someone like a Ted Cruz, his name, to come about, and sort of a last minute effort. We've been hearing about this, you know, for weeks and for months that this may happen, but it was shot down when they had their closed door rules committee meeting last week. But then right away, this was clearly a message to say, we are not happy. There are still a lot of never Trumps and anti-Trumps, even here within the delegate floor of the Republican convention. And that was their way to say almost immediately, this is going to be a convention like none you have ever seen. We are not happy with our nominee. However, they got shot down pretty quickly. You could tell that the people with the Republican National Committee almost immediately, Curtis, they continued talking. They overrode them. They did not have enough votes to overcome it. There are procedural things. If you do even something like this last minute, totally overridden, and they proceeded as scheduled. But it was clearly one of the most dramatic moments. I've covered conventions for a long time. I've never seen a basic roll call vote turn into just a melee almost immediately.
Now, Rita Cosby, as you had mentioned, normally it's a simple yay, nay, you know, from the crowd.
Yep.
Did they actually do a yay, nay, and what, according to the volume of the yays or the nays, do you think persevered?
Well, of the percentage, they need X amount of states. They need about 9 states. And in the end, they only had, it was like 6 or 7. We were starting seeing a different murky solution to it. But that's still a good amount when you're talking about 6 or 7 states out of the states that are here. So it clearly shows that there is a percentage here that is not happy with the rules. And I think they're going to be very, very vocal the rest of this convention. However, many people say that this was just more symbolic because, as we saw, they did get shot down. There's not many more efforts that they can make other than clamoring before the microphones, other than disrupting the procedures. We may see more of that happen the rest of this convention, but it may not go anywhere. It may just be a symbolic protest that's going to be very loud and, again, highly unusual, Curtis.
Now, I understand before Trump ascends to his bully pulpit on Thursday night to accept the nomination of the Republican Party, they're hammering out the Republican National Party platform as we speak. It's been hinted that they will declare pornography as a public health crisis. They're opposed to women in combat. They're opposed to gay marriage. and they want aversion therapy, which sounds a little bit like Sharia law to me, so that if you're born gay or lesbian, they then get to work you over and try to convert you back to being straight. Are those planks actually going to get through, as far as you know, Rita?
Well, it's interesting because it looks like they may get through. There's probably a good chance they will get through. The other thing, too, is the wall, Curtis. You forgot about that part in the national platform. That's, of course, been the big thing that Donald Trump has wanted, and we're hearing that that is in the platform, that they're going to agree to some sort of wall between the U.S. and Mexico border. That's a big coup for Donald Trump. It's interesting because Donald Trump's already been acting like, no matter what the national platform is, I kind of do my thing anyway. So there's a good chance it may pass. And often in these national platforms, they tend to be further to the right or further to the left. If you're at the Democratic convention here, the Republican one is clearly further to the right. And often that's used as a base. But a lot of times the candidates themselves, including a candidate as big and large as Donald Trump, larger than life, may not necessarily abide by it.
Now, the headliner in terms of the presenters tonight is not the guy I would have had as headliner, Mike Umbadichich, Rudy Giuliani, particularly since the theme is how to keep America safe, you know, particularly with all the recent action in the streets of America, the killings of the police officers in Dallas and Baton Rouge. And yet it's Trump's wife who's the headliner. Is she going to have subtitles? Because I got to tell you, Rita, sometimes I have a difficult time following what she says.
Well, I think she's been preparing for the speech. In fact, on Saturday when he came out of New York City with Mike Pence, she was not there. A lot of the other family members were there. And I was asking, where is she? And they said, well, she's preparing for this. The theme tonight, Curtis, is national security and also immigration. And what's fascinating, my first reaction was yours, Curtis, exactly like you. That's kind of an interesting choice to be teaming up with this night. But she came from Slovenia. She has talked already in a couple of interviews about how she came here legally. So I think she's going to focus a lot on the issue of immigration, coming to America, what it means to be an American. She's been practicing. Again, English is not her first language, as you point out, but she has been practicing feverishly, I've been told, for the last few days, preparing for this speech. And by the way, you left out, Curtis, too, that Donald Trump is going to be the one to introduce her. So we will see a little bit of Donald Trump tonight, but she's going to focus mostly on national security, but mostly immigration.
Now, Rita, I understand it's his wife and he wants to keep domestic tranquility in the Trump Tower, but if it's an introduction like he did for Pence on Saturday, in which he spoke extemporaneously for 28 minutes, never mentioned Pence, and then finally got around to his vice presidential choice, we may not hear from his wife until the wee hours of the morning.
Yeah, you know what? It could turn out to be a late night, to your point. By the way, she's not expected to start until late. Prime time here usually is around 9, 10-ish. You know, it's a late night here, always on the convention floor. But I think my gut tells me, Curtis, because you're right, he got blistered for talking about everything other than Pence for a long time. So I think what we're going to see here tonight, and just a few hundred yards in front of me, we're going to see Donald Trump probably staying pretty close to script, not going off too much. I think it's going to be a fairly short, fairly tight introduction by Donald Trump standards, which means longer than other people's standards, but I think it'll be a little more contained because I think he's seen the headlines. And I also think he doesn't want to give away too much tonight because his big night is Thursday night.
All right, final question to our political director, Rita Cosby, who is in Cleveland for the RNC convention, giving us live updates along with Ken Duffy, our news guy, and also Colin McShane, who is part of the Imus in the Morning show. Have you been outside, and can you describe for our listeners what the security precautions are in the streets of Cleveland?
I have been outside a lot. And, Curtis, it is unbelievable to see the security. Even when I was coming in yesterday, literally, we had to stop every few feet because dozens upon dozens of cop cars were wheeling by, guys with huge submachine guns, thousands upon thousands of officers. We're talking 70 different agencies are running security here. And the barricades are immense. They have basically these huge caged-in areas all around the convention center. And it takes quite a bit to get through, even for normal people, if you consider me normal, Curtis, but normal people to get through the security to get in here. It's quite a bit of a procedure. And there are already protesters all over the place. They're supposed to stay in these sort of contained areas about a quarter of a mile away. but some of them have already spilled out into the streets, and they are expecting it's going to be a very difficult week for law enforcement in this area in terms of security, juggling all of these, you know, VIPs and all these other people. You've got Donald Trump in town, and you have massive protests already. Here it is, just day one.
Do appreciate that. Rita Cosby, our political director here at WABC. Also, I'm contributing the efforts of our Cleveland Guardian Angels. You can go to the Curtis and Kuby Facebook page and see what they're doing in patrolling the surrounding areas.
Curtis Sliwa.
Between the Scylla and Charybdis of commentary.
The Drive at 577 WABC.
Louisiana. 9:25 on your drive home at 5 with yours truly, Curtis Sliwa, once again taking you home. There was a press conference earlier today by both the police of Baton Rouge and the FBI as they continue their investigation behind the killing of three police officers, the injuring of others, and whether this was the action of a lone gunman, Gavin Long, or he had help in being aided and abetted in this effort. On the line to discuss that, Elizabeth Crisp. She's the Capitol reporter for the Advocate newspaper in Baton Rouge. Thanks for joining us here on the Drive Home at 5, Liz.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
All right. Did we learn anything today at the police FBI press conference?
You know, it was a very detailed press conference. They went through, they had a giant map, aerial map of the area in which the shooting took place, and they went through step by step methodically exactly at what point and where the various officers were shot and where the shooter was engaged. One of the things that I think that we learned, they showed several photos from the surveillance footage. It was very methodical. He was, you know, in a mask and all black clothing, and just the path that he took, and he stayed very close to buildings to kind of cover himself. At one point, he had left an officer who was injured on the ground. He came back and shot him, actually. I think that just the most striking thing today from the news conference was just how methodical everything seemed to be.
What kind of firepower did the gunman Gavin Long possess?
We were shown a photo of it. It was and I apologize, it was a
sure.
IWI Tavar SAR, a 5.56 caliber rifle. So,
did they say if he had legally purchased it?
They are still looking into some aspects of the investigation. They still have not completed tracing his days leading up to, nor have they revealed how he acquired his weapons. There were two other firearms found in his car, one of them a handgun, and another one was an AR-15. So they haven't released all of that yet. They said that part of that is just they're still in the investigative stages.
Now, is it simply that he was walking down the block, as you said, all dressed in black with a mask on, obviously bearing the weapon, that that's what caused the police to respond to the scene?
Right, and it's very interesting the way the police mapped it out. He actually parked his car in one location, and then the law enforcement official said that he was actually in very, very good shape. So what he did is he ran around the back of the buildings very quickly, and it's not a short distance, it's several yards. He ran around the back and then kind of came back up the front and just started walking around the gas station, and so people started seeing this man dressed in all black and carrying a very, you know, for a lot of people would be a very shocking weapon just to see on the street. And so that's when people started calling. They didn't know what was going on. So the police do feel right now that this was a target against law enforcement officers. We had our police chief today. He said that he felt like if he had not been caught when he was caught, that they seriously think that he would have gone somewhere else to attack more officers.
Now, he seems in his past from Kansas City upon being released by the United States Marine Corps, although no blemishes on his record of military service, to have dabbled with a lot of extremist kinds of organizations. Did the police indicate if he actually stuck to any of them or if they, in fact, had any role in this shooting?
You know, that was another thing that they just said that they weren't quite willing to say. They said they're investigating all of these sensitized. They're aware of all of the social media posts and everything that we're all seeing. Right now, they're still trying to track down and get information from people who knew him. And so I think that they're not quite ready yet to identify exactly what he was involved in or whether any of that was an actual kind of structured involvement with any of these groups.
Well, we know he's from Kansas City, and we've been told by family members he was down in Baton Rouge to celebrate his birthday. But did he have any other contacts in Baton Rouge that he would be celebrating his birthday with? I mean, it seems an odd choice to celebrate a birthday when you're from Kansas City.
Right, and that's one of the questions that the police say today from the press conference. That's what they said that they're trying to answer. I think right now they're kind of being a little guarded because they haven't. There still seems to be people that they're trying to interview here in Baton Rouge to try to figure out what he was doing here. So I think they're being a little guarded with that information at this time, just until they can try to figure it all out. But they said that they're still working to try to track. He rented a car. It was a Chevy Malibu. He rented in Kansas City and drove it down here, but they don't have the records completely lined up on how, what his path was to Baton Rouge. And the state police superintendent today, he said that, they're piecing it together. They just don't want to release anything partial and then be wrong.
Oh, so understood. And then finally, in lieu of the police shootings, the deaths, the injuries, have Black Lives Matter and other community groups that were protesting on a regular basis in the aftermath of Alton Sterling's shooting by the two Baton Rouge police officers, have they ceased and desisted their street protests?
I am not aware of any protests that have gone on since. I know that there wasn't anything last night like that. I haven't heard whether there are any plans to revive any of that, but I do know that over the next several nights there are a lot of vigils planned by community groups, religious groups, and these have been groups that have been involved in the response to Mr. Sterling's death and everything, and now it seems to be there's a big tide that's shifting toward wanting to have vigils in memory of these officers and trying to bring some unity into the community.
Do appreciate that, Elizabeth Chris. She's the Capitol reporter for The Advocate in Baton Rouge. Another major turn of events. First Dallas, now Baton Rouge, and we'll certainly keep you in the loop on all the late-breaking details.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
Guardian Angel founder Curtis Sliwa.
WABCRadio.com.
Hot 39. Sounds like a bunch of grifters to me. But actually, it's from a fake band. Like, remember the documentary Spinal Tap, The Beats, in this case, and from the cartoon Doug. And it fits so naturally into the discussion we're going to have with America's Shrink. You see him regularly as a contributor on the Fox News Channel, and from time to time, he has catered to my many psycho what can we call them, Dr. Keith Abloh, psycho-extreme measures that I've taken in my life?
Yes. Let's call them psychological journeys.
Hmm.
Yours just have some detours and, some do-not-cross signs, things like that. But you go right through those, too.
Yeah, severe anger management, family court matters, all kinds of mishigash. But you apparently have come up with a remedy to the modern-day parent, whether they happen to be hipsters or millennials or a little older, an app for kids and teens that's anti-entitlement. Could you explain that?
Exactly. I've been on this train for a while saying, listen, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, they all train kids to have false lives, to love being famous. So when these guys came to me, they're like, look, we started something called hourly.help. hourly.help, and it allows parents to automate their kids' allowances. So you go on, you say, look, here are the chores. You want money. Why don't you work a little bit for that dough? Here are the chores. The parent loads some cash into this app, and as the kid completes the chores, the money flows to them. And so they get a great sense of autonomy. They feel, hey, I'm working. They send the before and after pictures. The parents hit approve, great job, or not yet. You got to finish your bed cleaning a little bit better, your bedroom cleaning a little bit more. So, you know, look, I did this with my 14-year-old Cole. What does Cole do? He's saying to me when we're, you know, out getting ice cream, hey, Dad, I got to get back because I got to clean up the basement. I'm like, what? Yeah, it's on hourly. You put it on yesterday for $15. So it gives him a great sense of, look, I'm on my way. I work for things. I've got my own cash. And you also donate part of it. Each kid decides which charity to donate a portion, which the kid decides. How, what percentage do you want to give to which charity?
Now, this is interesting because typically now we're in this, as you see, this frenzy of Pokemon Go with Pokemon battles, with all kinds of teenagers, hipsters, millennials searching out Pokemon characters. It was like 1,000 people outside of the Plaza Hotel last night, 11 o'clock at night, all copping a squat, all looking for Pokemon characters. Man. And it just seems to feed right into what you're saying.
It's the end of the world, right? Look, this is every enemy of America loves the idea of Pokemon Go because you're finding things that don't exist. It turns your world into virtual reality. So I said, hey, let's use the same information superhighway, create hourly.help, no H on hourly, hourly.help, like our families. And instead of giving kids fake lives, give them work. Give them a sense of responsibility. And that's what we really need now, because we got to turn tables on this internet thing and give parents back control, kids back control of their lives, and a sense of like, hey, I'm doing something here with my life, and I have real money. Now I've got real buying power. And it gives a kid a sense of like, hey, I'm on my way to adulthood. That way I don't have to live at home till I'm 35 on my parents' health insurance.
Yeah, well, you know, if they're Italian-American, they're Mamelukes. They live at home until they're like 48, 68, because nobody is ever going to take care of them the way mommy can.
Yeah, well, that, or you know, my Jewish mom who said, listen, if you stay home and you don't go to college and you want to commute, I'll get you a car. You know, so I knew that what was up with that. That's why I'm very keen on things that develop early responsibility in kids. And I see what's happened with Cole. Cole gives 20% of whatever he makes to Wounded Warrior. He could give it to the Guardian Angels, and that's what we should do. We should throw you up on hourly right away, Curtis.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. But let me ask you this. For those parents who are very frugal in their life, they throw nickels around like manhole covers. Maybe they're a success as a result of that. They got to kick in some more coin because the kid realizes if you're a cheapskate, right?
Well, sure. But listen, you can dial in whatever you want the child to be paid. If you want to pay a dollar, you can put it up. Here's what you can do for a dollar. If you want to put up $2, you can. If you want to make it 50 cents, that's up to you and you and your kid. But what's really beautiful is the kid can set a goal and say, look, within the next 3 months, I want to make myself $200, $300, whatever it is, depending on the age of the kid. Here's what I want to buy with it. But the kid can also get a money card, which is coming soon. So he feels literally like I've got my own and I work for it. And I think that's a really great thing in these days when we're telling kids, hey, go downtown and go looking for comic book characters that aren't really there on the dumpster, but you'll think they are.
All right, now I need advice from you as my personal shrink, since Dr. Keith Abloh, you are the shrink to America, oftentimes seen giving advice on the Fox News Channel. When I was a kid, my parents used to entice me by saying, like a lot of parents did to their kids, you know, if your tooth falls out, the tooth fairy will leave you some money under the pillow. So me being the masochist that I was, I would do Ed Norton like in the Fight Club. I would punch myself in the mouth to loosen the tooth even more so that I could get from them like 50 cents, a dollar, you know, because molars in the back were worth a lot more than frontal teeth.
Yeah, well, you know, you should have told that to anyone who's tried to stop you, assault you, or otherwise maim or kill you, of which there have been some in your long and illustrious career, because that early story could have saved them a lot of trouble. You're indestructible.
Yeah, but it seems like I'm a bit titched. I'm a bit ubotz. The furniture is upstairs and rearranged in the wrong rooms. But for those parents out there, those adults who might like this anti-entitlement app for kids and teens, how do they go about downloading it and getting it?
It's simple. You literally, you go to hourly.help, O-U-R-L-Y.help. You register. It couldn't be simpler. And your child will be alerted that there are chores waiting, and it is all automated. It couldn't be. It's easier than literally handing your kid a $10 bill because you put the money in the app. The app sends it to the kid, and it teaches responsibility. And it reminds the kid, hey, guess what? You haven't finished your chores. You better get this done within the next hour or you don't get that cash.
This is the way to fight back against the Pokemon Go app.
Curtis Sliwa, the deepest knowledge of the city. The Drive at 5, 77 WABC.
About 53 on the drive home at 5 with yours truly, Curtis Sliwa. Well, his mentor, James Brown, is probably looking down and nodding his head and saying, Shakedown Sharpton, you're at it again? That's why I call him Mouse Slim Shady Sharpton. In a New York Post piece, a black trucker, that's right, a guy who has a trucking firm in Arizona, needed a leg up in a problem that he had with Verizon, a huge multinational corporation. So his local black pastor said, oh, well, we got to refer this to Al Slim Shady Sharpton. Let's go to New York and sit at the National Action House of Hate and make an appeal for the Rev to get on board. And when they went to the headquarters in Harlem, he said, man, I thought Al was an honest guy. I thought he would do what he said he would do. But Al Slim Shady Sharpton said, okay, I'm going to get to it. And I'm going to really get on the case of Verizon. I'll threaten them with boycotts. I'll threaten them with bad media. And you see, they'll fold like a cheap camera. Now, there's going to be some expenses involved. If you could please put in an envelope, $16,000 in large denominations, and please make sure it's only cash. So, I mean, the guy, Reggie Anders, figures, hey, $16,000, you know, I've been ripped off for hundreds of thousands by Verizon. It's a deal. And then he saw that nothing transpired. And that it appeared that Al Slim Shady Sharpton was double-dipping on him. So now, after being shown the door and the curb and getting dissed and dismissed by the Shakedown artist, Al Slim Shady Sharpton, he has a federal lawsuit seeking $1.75 million in damages from Al Slim Shady Sharpton, who naturally will claim poverty since he owes millions of dollars to the federal tax treasury, but his complexion is his protection. Anyone else who doesn't pay payroll taxes like he was found guilty of, they go to jail, but not Sharpton. But then it gets better, because when he was doing the eulogy at the funeral that was taking place in Baton Rouge, of the vendor who had been shot outside the convenience store by the two Baton Rouge cops, he added a new wrinkle into what might be the demonstrations led by his chant, No Justice, No Peace.
You don't have to march about it. You don't have to debate about it. We can just keep our money in our pocket. We learn how to boycott in Baton Rouge, and we're going to meet in Baton Rouge, and the same companies that back these laws that are discriminatory from Gardner to Alton, we're going to come out and close them down by keeping our money in our pocket.
Boycott. He says one is a big box store. I can only imagine, right? Walmart, Target. Said there are a few other powerful companies the need to have boycotts thrust at them because somehow they're defending killer cops. Now, you know what he's going to do, Al Slim Shady Sharpton. He knows exactly which companies these are. And he's going to go and he's going to have a meeting with them, and they'll take the meeting because they don't want to be called racist. And he's going to tell them in their boardroom or wherever, after doing a pat down of all the executives and making sure the place ain't wired up. He may even do a walk and talk to avoid any kind of recording of the events. He's going to say, guys, I'm here to sell you civil rights insurance. And they say, we don't need civil rights insurance. And he's going to say, yes, you do. And from who? And he's going to say, you need civil rights insurance from me and the National Action Hate Network. So either pay now or you suffer fiscal strain and pain when we boycott you and you're affected by negative media. And guess what? They pay up.